everybody, the House State Affairs Committee will please come to order. We have three bills to consider this morning. First, we'll take the roll call, please.
Representative Tallarico?
Here.
Representative Stutes?
Here.
Representative Keller?
Here.
Representative Vasquez?
She's excused.
Representative Christ Tompkins?
Here.
Chair Lynn?
Here. And Representative Vasquez is excused. I don't know if you got that or not. Okay. Very good. Okay. We have three bills to consider this morning. All three have been heard before. So the first one is HB 217 on the Spirit license plate. The second is SB 9 regarding the election pamphlet and voter database. And the third one is HB 243. Which is the PFD subject for people who've had their conviction vacated. And we will begin, please, with HB 217. You can stay there or go there, wherever you want to go.
Thank you, Chairman. For the record, Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins from Southeast Alaska.
Okay, now, as I recall, the thing I was told this morning, this was previously heard, and we did adopt the CS. No new CSs or anything?
That's correct. We're still working from the same CS.
Okay, fine. And do you expect to have any amendments at all?
Yes, Chairman, after further conversations with...
Very fine. Please begin. Introduce yourself and begin.
So in summary, this bill is basically American Idol meets Alaska license plates. It's a statewide license plate design competition held every 4 years, administered and juried by the Alaska State Council on the Arts. And once the final designs are picked by the jury selected by the Alaska State Council on the Arts.
Would you please, what's this American Idol for the geriatric generation? I'd like to know what that is.
I'm betraying my generation here. American Idol is a reality TV show that swept across the nation, gosh, probably about a decade ago, and it pitted different singers performing songs. There would be a jury, and eventually all of America would get a vote which of the singers they thought was best.
So it was a talent show contest.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So this is sort of a similar idea, except for license plate design and art portraying Alaska. And the idea is that every license plate in the state of Alaska is a canvas, and that Alaska artists would be able to have would have the ability to compete to put their designs forth as a license plate design that Alaskans could choose for their vehicles. And the revenue from this competition, after a winner is selected by Alaskans by popular vote, would go to help fund the Alaska State Council on the Arts. So it's partly motivated to generate a modest revenue stream from the State Council on the Arts, and it's partly motivated to basically make sure that Alaska has the most stunning and beautiful license plates of all 50 states in the nation, designed by Alaskans.
We hope to keep it that way.
My desire, exactly.
Any other part of that? Any questions from the committee at this point? Okay. Do you have an amendment, you said?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So after further conversation with the Department of Motor Vehicles, and this has sort of been an ongoing dialogue, in the committee substitute, the plate is priced at $35, and with conversations with the division, for the sake of consistency, we wanted to change that number to $50, which is, again, for consistency and for their purposes, a desired number. And so I was hoping to entertain an amendment to change that number from 35 to 50. And for clarity, that's page 1, line 14, in committee substitute for House Bill 217, version N.
Now, do we have a copy of that amendment before we move it?
Yeah, I'm not quite ready to move it. If you would describe, the existing law is 150, right? So if you would just describe the process of getting to 50. So.
Sure.
Again, yeah.
My understanding is that the $150 in law is vestigial and is a statute that has been unused for years, and the drafters latched onto it. And but it's not currently a plate design that's offered in reality.
Okay, thanks. So, if you want, Mr. Chair, I'll go ahead and make the request. Okay, I move that we amendment number one.
Okay, is there any objection? There's no objection. The amendment number one passes. Okay, any other comment?
No, other than it's been a pleasure working with the State Council on the Arts and various artists in Alaska who are sort of excited about visioning this process.
Okay, thank you. Go to public testimony. Anybody online or in the audience who would like to testify?
the division director is online for questions.
Amy. Ms. Erickson, are you online? Do you have any comments or questions about this or testimony?
Mr. Chair, this is Amy Erickson for the record. The division has no objections to the bill.
Very fine. Any questions for Ms. Erickson? Thank you very much. Okay. Anybody in the audience like to testify? If not, I'll close public testimony and bring it back to the committee. What's the desires of the committee? And you get to vote, too. Okay, hearing no objection, I'll entertain a motion to move the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move that we move CS for House Bill number 217, that's version November, as amended out of committee, with attached zero fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Thank you. Okay. Any objection? No objection. The bill passes. Thank you for bringing this to us. We'll take a short at ease while we fill out the paperwork. Affairs Committee, please come back to order. I'd like to note that my colleague, Representative Grunberg, has now joined us, and he informed me he obviously could not sign and make a recommendation on HB 217, but he does, in fact, support it.
That's correct. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, SB 9. Proponents, please come forward. What's this note then? Yes, we done.
Yeah.
Okay, please introduce yourself, and for the record, this bill was previously heard, of course, but give us just a quick thumbnail on it, and then anything else you'd like to add.
Thank you, Chairman Lynn. For the record, my name is Chuck Kopp, staff to Senator Peter Michicki. The committee substitute before the committee takes into account information security standard that is recognized as best practice in the industry for transmission of this type of data. Representative Keller brought this to our attention that it would be good to have that stated in the law that we want to not only adhere to the best practice of data security, but also emphasizes the confidentiality of the data being transmitted under this section. We agree entirely, and this language was brought forth as the best standard practice to put into statute by legislative legal.
Now, does this relate directly to, we need to adopt the version on this, I believe. Does this explain the difference?
What I just explained is the additional portion of the language, which Chairman Lynn is on page 2, and it's lines 24 through 27. Is where the additional data security standard is mentioned.
Well, Mr. Chair, just for clarity, that's on the new CS that we have not adopted as a working draft yet.
That's why I say, so that is part of the new CS, is that correct?
Yes, Chairman, yes.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion to adopt it. I believe it's version N, is that correct?
That's right. Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt CS for Senate Bill 9 LS0244 November is the working document for discussion today, and the changes were described, but there will be more comments.
Okay. Without objection, version N is hereby adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Continue. Chairman. Okay. So just brief summary, Mr. Chairman. What the bill does is it provides that anyone who registers to vote is provided access to any one of a number of online abilities to register, which is already provided in statute. Additionally, what this regulates is the confidentiality of how data can be released by the division. And on page 2 of the committee substitute that we've just adopted, we've added one section to allow the sharing of information with states that have organized together, and I would emphasize this is state-led and state-regulated, to share voter database for the purpose of verifying voter registration data and setting best practices for industry security with data with respect to that per Representative Keller's amendment.
Okay, thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the Chair, Mr. Kopp, we had talked about an amendment on the election pamphlet, and I understand that the sponsor would prefer that that not be added to this particular bill.
Through the Chair, Representative Grunberg, that is correct, yes.
If I may ask one more question.
Yes.
Did he have any substantive problem with that?
Well, that's outside.
Okay, forget it.
Yeah.
Okay, I withdraw the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Vice Chair Keller.
Yeah, just if I could, I want to just put on the record that the sponsor staff was very accommodating on this amendment. And I, just for the record, what it adds is the words, the information security standards of the International Organization for Standardization has to be in place, or a published information security standard used by the state of Alaska and approved by the Department of Admin. I think it's an elegant sideboard that needed to be on there, and I just really appreciate the sponsor's willingness to bring in there.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question to the maker, the originator of the amendment, the vice chair. Not being familiar with the International Organization for Standardization, that's capitalized, or their security standards, maybe for the record, the representative could tell us what those are.
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
We have online John Lindbeck from the Electronic Registration Information Center, and I'm sure he heard your question, and if with your permission, I'd like to...
Well, let's find out. Mr. Lindbeck, are you online?
I'm here, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
Please identify yourself for the record. And
yes, it's John Lindbeck. I'm the Executive Director of the Electronic Registration Information Center, or ERIC.
Okay. Did you hear Representative Grunberg's question?
I did, Mr. Chairman. The ISO, International Standards Organization, sets standards for a lot of business practices around the world. They have an extensive set of standards set for businesses and agencies that store and protect private data. I don't have them in front of me, but they are the standard when auditors go out and, for example, audit a data center for security purposes. They are auditing against that standard. It's the most common one, and it's the most respected one. And, you know, it's many, 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 many pages of requirements and standards that the folks who protect our data are required to follow. And it's considered the industry standard.
Okay, any questions? Representative Grunberg.
Just on the record, thank you very much, Mr. Lindbeck. Thank you, Representative Keller.
Thank you. Okay. Senator Machicki has joined with the staff here. Would you please introduce yourself and make any just final comments, perhaps? Maybe not final, but perhaps.
Okay. Well, I won't take a lot of your time. I appreciate you hearing the bill. I believe in the bill. I think it's the right thing to do. I from discussing with most of you, I think you believe the same, and I appreciate your improvements to the bill. I think securing the confidentiality of those records is extremely important, probably the most important thing to remember as we get into a national database. So thanks for your work on it.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the senator? Okay. Representative Stutes.
Thank you. Good morning, Senator.
Morning.
This information goes into a national database. What will this information be used for in this database?
Yeah, the information actually doesn't go into a national database. The information referred, or our information is processed using a national database. Our information is secure. So it's much like several of the other databases that law enforcement and other agencies use, that confidentiality is protected. It just uses that information so that we understand that in our case that our voter rolls are secure and that people are not registered elsewhere. And
through the chair, Representative Stutes, this is only a state-led and state-organized database. Sometimes we can think of it as something larger than that, but there is no nexus or link between this state-controlled database and any other federal database or a national database, so to speak. It is entirely a state-led and state-controlled database.
Thank you for that information.
Thank you very much. Thank you. At this point, let's go to public testimony. Is there any public testimony? Anybody in the audience? If not, I'll close it out and bring it to the committee. What's the wishes of our committee on this bill?
Mr. Chair, I would move CS for Senate Bill number 9, LS0244, November, with attached individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Okay, any objection? Not the bill passes. Thank you. I very much support this bill. Thank you for bringing it to us.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, you know the reason I entered into this was just protecting the purity of our state-issued documents in the voting place. I think it's ultimately very important, and we very much appreciate your support to this committee.
Very good. Thank you so much for bringing it to us. At ease while I fill out the paperwork. State Affairs Committee will please come back to order. Next bill up for consideration is House Bill 243, and I'm going to ask my Vice Chair, Representative Keller, to please chair this bill because it is my bill.
Okay, Representative Wes Keller. HB 243 is before us, and we have also have a blank CS, and what I'd like is a motion to accept it as a working document, and then I will ask the staff to go back and explain the changes and the process and just an overview of the bill so we're all on the same page. So do we have a motion to adopt this?
Representative Keller, I move that we adopt the CS for House Bill 243, number 29-LS1279-F.
Okay. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll object for discussion.
The objection isn't needed because the motion was to use it as a working document. So if you're against using this document, then...
Oh, so it's not not to adopt it.
Right.
I withdraw the objection.
Okay, thank you. So if you would, Representative Lynn or your staff, introduce yourself and give us a background. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. We had a pretty good discussion on this bill before. I think it's very, very important, for the state to act in an honorable fashion. So with your permission, I'd like to have my staff present the bill at this point.
Great. Introduce yourself for the record and go ahead.
My name is Deneen Tack, Legislative Aide for Representative Lynn. Before us on version F, the only change from our previous version of G was the title in We just tightened that up, and that was the only change. The background to the bill is after this interim, when the Fairbanks Four were released, Representative Lynn noticed that there was an injustice on the books that didn't follow up for any Alaskan who was convicted of a felony once their conviction, if it were overturned later, would have any recourse in filing for the permanent fund dividend. And that's this bill is essentially just for all Alaskans to be able to apply for their permanent fund dividend if they had had the injustice of the felony against them.
Any questions for the sponsor?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenberg.
We had a number of issues that we raised the last time, and I have since talked to Mr. Burnett from the department and gotten some of my questions answered. Some of them I did not get answered, mainly because of the press of time. And some of them, I think, will go to the sponsor. Some of them will go to Mr. Burnett. And the first one, Mr. Chair, is a question that Representative Tallarico asked. And that was, if a person was convicted of multiple offenses, but only one of which was vacated or reversed, I can't tell from the language here, and maybe I'm just not reading it closely enough, and I'll ask Ms. Tuck this, what happens then? Because it seems to me it's the intent that they would all have to be reversed. Through the chair, am I stating your question right, Representative?
Thank you, yeah.
Representative Tallarico?
Through the chair, Representative Greenberg, that was my question, yes.
Through the chair, Representative Greenberg, along with your packet this morning is a memorandum from Legal Services dated January 29th, 2016. On page 2, number 3, I believe that does answer your question. And Representative Tallarico's.
We'll take a brief at ease while the record, what we're reviewing is a legal memo from our legal services that answers the five questions that were posed at the last meeting. Representative Greenberg, do you have your answer to here? Or maybe I should ask Representative Tallarico, are you satisfied with the response?
Well, honestly, Mr. Chair, I'd like to hear Representative Greenberg's. I'm still perusing through that response, okay. And Representative Greenberg may have a far better answer. He's
Representative Greenberg.
Hey, thank you. First of all, I appreciate you doing this to me. This answers most of my questions, and I appreciate Ms. Martin, if she's on the line, for the work she's done with this too. She's a good lawyer, and. With respect to Representative Tallarico's question, which is item number 3 on page 2 of the memo, I think that answers his question. It certainly answers my understanding of his question. With respect to the other questions, and I sort of put these in notes on the on the front of my this. I had only, okay, first of all, with respect to the other questions,
okay, Representative Greenberg, you're on to another question, then we'll just take these in pieces. So
yes, I've answered the Tallarico portion, okay. And I'm on the
other. Okay, next question. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question goes to part 4 of this, and I don't have any problem if Ms. Tuck remains up there, but I'd like somebody from the Department of Revenue to be able to at least join her, so I can answer that.
Just for clarification, you mean response 4 from the on the legal memo? Okay. If we could ask Jerry if you come up. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yes, we have somebody at the table from Department of Revenue, and Representative Greenberg has a question for you. Representative Greenberg.
Through the chair, could you identify yourself, please?
For the record, my name is Sarah Race. I'm the director of the Permanent Fund Dividend Division.
We appreciate the work you've done on this. My question really relates to part 4 of this, which deals with the garnishment
for child support. And then I'm going to proceed on to a different scenario a little bit. But for child support, it says, the last sentence, if a person receives a dividend after being released, comma, that dividend is subject to garnishment. This is the last sentence on page 2 for the members. The thing I'm concerned about is, first of all, there is nothing to entice the obligor to apply for a permanent fund dividend if it's basically going to be all taken up with taxes and go to pay child support to somebody, a former spouse whom they may hate. And I'm, that's from actual experience as a family lawyer. Some of these people would rather die than see the former spouse get a dime. What can be done so that the real needy person, the parent, the custodial parent, can get that back child support?
Through the chair, Representative Grotenberg, it would be similar to any other garnishment type. Because a permanent fund is a voluntary program, again, the way in which we explain it to individuals is that it is an amount of money that is going towards a debt that you owe.
Through the chair.
Representative Grotenberg, follow up.
And this gets a little away from the bill, but it's to the heart of what's really going to go on here. Is there any mechanism in state law to allow the Child Support Enforcement Division or another entity to be subrogated to the obligor's right to get the dividend and allow either through an agency order or some other method them to apply?
Through the chair, Representative Grotenberg, I'm not quite sure I understand your question. Are you saying could the Child Support Division require that the individual file for the dividend so then the funds would be available for child support?
Either that.
Representative Grotenberg.
I'm sorry. Either that or some mechanism that would allow in that circumstance the CSED to apply on behalf of the recalcitrant obligor.
Through the chair, Representative Grotenberg, I'm not aware of any provision that I'm not. I could check into that to see if there is a provision.
We should maybe talk.
Representative Grotenberg, yeah, that is a little bit outside of the scope of the bill, and you know, it sounds. My first reaction is that it likely would take a different legislation and a different bill.
That may be.
I agree.
And I assume that's true for any other creditor as well. You have to speak.
Okay. Did you have another question, Representative Grotenberg?
Yeah, I did here. Okay. Now, the other question here is on page 1, line 11.
Representative Grotenberg, are you referring to version F of the bill? And
I'm sorry. Maybe I'm going wrong. I was looking at G. Let me look at F. Yes, I'm referring to the F Foxtrot version. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we're looking at the portion from lines 10 through 13 on page 1. If the conviction is vacated or reversed, and the charges were either dismissed or found not guilty, I assume from that would mean that all appeals, that the case would be finally disposed of, because it wouldn't be finally reversed until the final appeal was decided. Yeah. Okay. So I'm asking Ms. Tuck through the chair.
What was your question again, Representative Grotenberg?
I think I answered it.
he answered your own question.
Yeah. I think I've got it. Okay. I do apologize for
wondering. No, that's okay. That's okay. It's a working committee here. And any other comments or questions on version F of the CS for 243?
And I'm sorry, on the memo itself, item number 2, do changes need to be made to allow an estate to apply? If the person dies, and I'm looking at page 2, line, item number 2, last sentence.
Now we're talking about the legal memo again?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm getting ahead of myself, I think, here. If a person dies after the time limit has already already passed the 120-day time limit under AS 4323-005J, the estate would not be able to apply for the dividends. And this does directly, I think, maybe relate to this bill. Ms. Race, do you see that scenario occurring very often? And I'm talking about particularly after the effective date of this bill, it will open up eligibility for back permanent fund dividends for a number of people. I don't see anything in the bill, maybe I'm wrong, that limits the look-back period. So presumably somebody what it says is, and I'm looking at the last paragraph of the bill, the transition section, and it says that notwithstanding the normal time limit for applying for a dividend, an individual who is eligible under the bill must apply for a dividend not later than 120 days after the effective date of the Act. And it's clear from that to me that the intent is to allow people, regardless of when they were exonerated or when they died, to apply. However, paragraph 2 of the memo says that another provision of law might bar them from doing that. And what I'm wondering, and you can see that relates to the bill on page 1, lines 14 through the top of page 2, that the estate, if that time limit had already passed, the estate would not be able to apply for the dividends. And I'm just wondering, first of all, Ms. Race, is that correct? Are we therefore eliminating the right of certain estates from people who have been wrongly convicted to apply for the dividend?
Through the Chair, Representative Grootenberg, I wasn't involved in part of speaking with legal, but typically how it works with a dividend and an estate application, an estate is typically only open for a certain period of time anyways when an individual passes. With our regular estate application, a person has 1 year from the time of death to be able to apply for that estate. So essentially, this would be somewhat extending that time period if the person passed within the year and 120 days.
Hillary Martin is online, I believe. Am I right there? Yeah. And if and I'm wondering if you're following this conversation and have anything to add, Hillary.
Yeah, this is Hillary Martin from Legislative Legal Services. Representative Grootenberg, through the chair, in the memo referring to the 120-day time limit, it's both for people who would come under Section 1 of the bill, where after the effective date of the Act, their conviction gets overturned. But it would also apply for anyone whose conviction was overturned, years ago, and now there's 120 days they have after the effective date. So in either situation, the estate would have 120 days, just the same as a person who is not deceased.
Mr. Chair, Representative Grunberg.
Ms. Martin, I'm interested in the people in the second category, people whose conviction has been overturned prior to the effective date of the bill. And in some of these cases, their estates would have been closed some time ago. Is there a mechanism that those estates could be reopened to allow the estate to receive these dividends?
Hillary, would you like to respond to that?
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, I'm not very well versed in how estates and probate works. I do know that this provision in the transition section gives an additional 120 days to anyone whose conviction was before the effective date of the act. I'm not sure how that would work through probate and other things, but they would still have that 120 days to apply.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
This could involve a substantial amount of money for a small estate, and particularly if there's child support or something like that due. And my question is simply whether the estate, which may have been closed, could be reopened to allow an application under the bill. I don't want to hold the bill up anything, but this is something that could have some real effect here. Obviously a policy decision could be made not to allow that to happen with an estate that was closed some time ago, but at least it seems under the bill there's nothing to prevent an estate from applying. But my concern is if the estate has been closed, how that will work. And through the chair, Mr. Chair, is there anybody on the line who may be able to answer that particular question?
Representative Grunberg, taking that your word, you don't want to hold up the bill.
No, I don't.
I just would like to point out that it seems like a bit of a stretch to examine the bill to make sure it has a mechanism that goes back and open, closed estates. And so it just seems like it's a additive thing. So I would just like to press on. Did you have other questions?
No, Mr. Chair, that may be the will of the committee. That's not necessarily a bad policy decision, but it's something that we need to let people know on the committee that could occur so that they know that they're making that policy decision.
I appreciate very much, Representative Grunberg, that you put that on the record, because that is something that I'm sure thought will be given because you brought it up, and I do appreciate it. So. Any further questions on version F of 243? Okay, we're going to stop, and we have nobody online, I don't think, to testify. We have a number for questions if need be. We have nobody in the room, I don't think, further that wants to testify. Going once, twice. Okay, so we're going to close public testimony. The bill's forward to committee for discussion or potential action.
Ooh.
Did I forget something?
Well, I just wondered, did you adopt this version?
Yeah, we did.
I thought it was only for discussion. That's why I didn't make my motion. I think we have to adopt it.
Okay, we're still on the record. I didn't take an at ease. Is there a motion to adopt? First, that's what I was asking for, a motion here to move the bill or at ease.
Yeah, we had to adopt it.
To just explain, it was just a confirmation that we do have version F in front of us, and it's now there for committee discussion or action.
Mr. Chair, I see we have Nancy Mead in the audience from the court system, and relative to my last line of question, if I could ask her a question.
Okay, we'll reopen public testimony and ask Nancy to come up from the court system to respond to a question from Representative Grunberg.
Thank you for the leeway.
Representative Grunberg.
Me, thank you for coming up and being here. I think you've heard my questions, not very artfully put, but the scenario is that there's an estate that's been closed. And we have under the bill
that they have 120 days to reapply, to apply for the PFD at this point. Is there a mechanism under the court rules or procedures to allow that to estate to be reopened?
You would identify yourself for the record.
Thank you for the record. My name is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System. Through the Chair, Representative Gruenberg, like Ms. Martin, I'm not well-versed in probate law. So I can't be definitive about a response for you. I will say that I don't see a barrier to have somebody applying for a PFD on somebody's behalf when that person is deceased, and the bill would give the person and therefore their estate the right to collect that PFD. So although I don't know exactly how probate law works, I can imagine that the PFD office would accept an application from somebody on behalf of a deceased individual. And I'm not sure if that addresses your question.
Through the Chair.
General Gruenberg.
Through the Chair. It does not, because my question doesn't relate to whether the PFD will accept the application. My question is whether there would be a mechanism, an estate or something, if the estate has been closed. And I don't need an answer now, and possibly we can explore this informally later and get some kind of an answer as the bill moves along. But my concern was simply, if somebody had died and their estate had been closed, there may be nobody who would be eligible to apply because there's no longer an estate. And obviously, if we don't have the people to answer that now, maybe we could find that answer. And I apologize for not.
You can respond if you would like, Nancy.
Through the Chair, Representative Gruenberg, I'm afraid I don't know the definitive answer to your question.
Right. And just to remind the committee, that was a question that's on the record, and we had kind of more or less agreed to let it ride on the record and not affect the action on the bill. So
that is correct.
Okay. So we'll close public testimony again, and thank you, Nancy. Back to the committee. Representative Price Tompkins, did you have a comment?
I like the bill.
Representative Stutz?
I'd like to move House Bill 29-LS1279, version F, from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Seeing no objection, the bill moves, and we'll take an at-ease while we do.
I'd like to thank the committee for passing on my bill. I'm very, very happy we're able to do that. Our next meeting is Thursday, February 4th. We have three bills scheduled at that time. The first is HB 273, that's vehicle transfer on death. HB 229, repeal administrative review committee. And HCR 15, Uniform Rules Regulation Review. Okay. Is there anything else to come before the committee or any comments or anything? If not, I'd like to thank the committee. Good hearing. We are adjourned.